Hello everyone, I'm Louis Vargas, and you're listening to episode 44 of the Art Scene Podcast. Today's guest is Joe Yorty, artist and co-founder of Best Practice, which is an alternative art space in San Diego. I recently visited the San Diego area, which also happens to be my hometown, to talk to Joe about his background in the Navy, his art practice, and the work he is doing with Best Practice, which he co-founded and still runs with Ali Mutt. Before I play our conversation, I wanted to first plug a few things. The first is Current Scene, a biennial occurring in Rochester, New York, that is dedicated to supporting small and mid-sized art venues and promoting the region's art community. You can learn more about it on episode 42 of the pod, where I sat down with the organizer, Blue Cease. The biennial runs through September 17th. Another new solo show has opened at Part 2 Gallery in Oakland featuring the work of Kelly Ording. The show runs through December 13th. I also wanted to point out that our friends over at Part 2 Gallery have opened a new space in Los Angeles, so if you're in that area, be sure to check it out. Then over at Et Al Gallery in San Francisco, a new show is open titled Hsu Quan Watertight Mesh, curated by Maddie Klett. The show features Quan's new 3D video and 3D printed sculptures. For more info, visit etaletc.com. Then over at SF MoMA, the exhibition titled Soft Power has recently opened, featuring 50 new works by 20 artists from 12 different countries. The exhibition itself is about the ways in which these artists deploy art to explore their roles as citizens and social actors. Soft Power is open till February 17th, and be sure to check out sfmoma.com for more info on programming. All right, now here's my conversation with Joe. So cool. So thanks for coming on.
Sure.
Joe, I think I've seen you recently in the last couple of years, right? Or when was the last time that I actually talked to you? Since I graduated from college?
Or since you worked here.
Since I worked, oh, right.
It's been, yeah.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. The last 7 years of my life have gone by so fast.
Yeah.
It seemed like I'd seen you a couple of years ago, but I don't think so.
Yeah. And the cool part is that we're at the University of San Diego, which is my alma mater, and your alma mater as well.
Yeah.
When I was a student here, were you like the facilities guy, or what was your role then?
My role is basically the same. It's just my job is much bigger than it was back then. But yeah, I'm the facilities manager.
Yeah, and you did like, I mean, you could have fooled me even then that I thought you were like a teacher. But I mean, you taught everybody how to use the wood shop, the dark room. You always had it open for people. You like checked out all the equipment. I remember then. Like,
uh-huh.
I think you were like the jack of all trades. Which, by the way, walking through the halls, it seems like that's still the case.
Oh yeah, definitely. Yeah. Except I did teach a class last year. The first time I taught a class here was last year. I taught the advanced sculpture class, and I'm teaching a one-unit woodworking class now.
Yeah.
So that has been added as, like, it's optional, though, for me.
Yeah. Yeah, your full-time job is really, like, running still the facilities and everything around here.
Yeah,
So let's start with that because, as I mentioned, you went to school here, too.
Mm-hmm.
Before you went to school here, where are you from? Where are you from originally?
I was born in southwestern Utah, in St. George, and then when, in 1987, I think it was, I was like 9 years old, 9 or 10 years old, we moved to Southern California, to Escondido, and my dad was a carpenter, and we moved to Southern California for work. And then I went to high school in Southern California, and then I joined the Navy. I left when I was 18 years old in 1995.
Like out of high school, you enlisted?
I enlisted in the Navy, yeah. So I signed a 6-year enlistment contract and very quickly learned that it wasn't for me and applied for an ROTC program so I could get out of my enlistment, go to college, and then go back in the Navy after college as an officer. And I was like, that's got to be a better route because my whole reason for joining the military was to get money for college because I grew up in a blue-collar family that didn't.
Right.
That didn't value education, but also just had no idea how to like help me. I didn't. I later found out I didn't need to join the Navy to get money for college, but hey, that's how it worked out, you know.
So. But you yourself valued it even in high school. You like there was ultimately always a plan where you wanted to go to school.
I think so, yeah. I mean, my dad taught me the trade of carpentry, and I worked with him in a cabinet shop when I was a teenager. And I thought that maybe I wanted to do that, but my dad knew he wanted better for me. He was also developmentally disabled and deaf, so he just didn't have the capacity to go to college. And I think he wanted that for me, but he didn't know how to, like, he didn't know how to help me with that. So
right.
He would always tell me, don't go into the construction trade. Don't go and get your contractor's license. It's a hard life.
Yeah.
The work will be good for a while, and then you'll be without work for years. And anyway, and then I just made friends with the right people in high school that also wanted to go to college. I'm not sure what it was about wanting to go to college. Why, of all my brothers and sisters, why I was the only one that actually did it?
Sure.
I don't know.
And, you know, you're an artist yourself. And so were you always like, was that always a thing too? When I mean, you mentioned how your father taught you a little bit carpentry as well. So I'm wondering, even in high school, were you doing like work, like working on art and stuff, or did that come later?
No, it came later. I didn't know that I was interested in art. Even in high school, I definitely didn't think that what I was doing was art. I took a photography class. My grandmother was an academic. She was a trained musician, and she was also an amateur photographer, so she always had cool camera gear, and I always thought it was kind of cool.
Yeah.
So I took a photography class in high school, but the way they taught the class it was different than the art classes.
Yeah.
It was more along the lines of like a wood shop or metal shop class. It was kind of like a class to teach you how to use a camera, how to use a darkroom. It wasn't until I got into college, I was enlisted for a few years, and then I got into that ROTC program and came to USD and thought, I want to study photography. So I took a photography class and then learned that it was part of a larger art department, that you didn't get a degree in photography, that
wow.
I had to take classes in drawing and painting and sculpture and art history. And so that's where the bug bit me, was when I took a sculpture class with faculty who's no longer here, but that's when I learned that I could use the skills that I developed as a carpenter to make sculpture, and I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I knew nothing about contemporary art before I came to college. I'd never been into an art museum.
Mm-hmm.
I think the first time I ever went to an art museum was when I was 21 years old. So I had no idea what art was or what it could be, and it bit me in that sculpture class, and I don't know, that was 21 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, it's funny, I mean, I grew up going to museums, but I don't think the concept of the history of art, I didn't get that till I went to undergrad either.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and it's weird. Like, I don't know how, to this day, I start thinking about where I work now. Like, I don't even know how I even, like, just by sheer luck that I'll take an art history class because they make me have to do it if I want to study photography here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's amazing how that opens up like your world to like, oh shit, there's all these different things I could do other than what I thought.
Yeah, and I think all of that too. The other thing that happened, a huge life moment that happened to me in college, is I came out of the closet. I grew up in, my mother's an evangelical Christian, and I grew up knowing thinking that was just not okay. But I think taking art, but taking classes in the other humanities too, just opened me up to an entire world that I was so unaware of.
Yeah.
It wasn't just art that did that. It was just the humanities and academia that allowed me to like totally, it opened it up a whole new world to me, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And then when you got done with school, did you end up continuing for a few more years in the Navy as an officer?
Yeah, in 2002 I graduated college, and I they commissioned me like the day after we graduated. I had to pay back with a 4-year commitment as an officer, which was much better than being enlisted. I'm glad, I have no regrets doing that.
Like, you definitely saw the difference in lifestyle.
Oh my God, yeah, yeah, definitely. But also the program that I went to when I was enlisted, the program that I went into was going to send me to a submarine.
Oh,
but I got out, the training was so long, the training took 2.5 years, that I did nothing but train, and then I got into this ROTC program. So I never actually had to go to the submarine, so...
Thank God for that, huh?
Oh, my God, yeah. I've been on submarines before, and I, yeah.
Yeah, I hear they can be claustrophobic.
It's horrible,
little.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the job that I got as an officer, I was stationed on surface ships, and I actually quite enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we were at war. Oh, we went to a war. We went to war in Iraq in 2003, which
I was going to ask if you
a
got
year
deployed.
After I graduated.
Yeah.
The first ship I went to, after some training in Newport, Rhode Island, the first ship I went to was stationed in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
So I lived in Japan for 2 years, stationed on a guided missile cruiser. And when the bombing campaign started in Iraq in, I think it was early 2003, we were the only ship that was in dry dock.
Wow.
So all every ship that was at the base in Yokosuka, Japan, went to the Persian Gulf to begin fighting the war. Except our ship, we were in dry dock. They couldn't fill it. They couldn't get the ship ready quick enough to send us to the Persian Gulf. So I actually didn't. I mean, I spent time in the Persian Gulf later, but right.
But not that initial like
not that initial
year
part.
Like where it started.
Yeah.
Well, so then you did that for 4 years, and then
I got out in 2006.
You got out in 2006, and you know I think. Oh, yeah, I think I started undergrad in the fall of 2005. So, yeah, I think I saw you, like, that spring.
That's when I got hired that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I came back to San Diego in 2005. Yeah.
And when you came, when you got out, well, I guess throughout that entire time, I mean, there wasn't really room, really, to continue an art practice, right? Because you were just busy.
No, I did. Did you
find time to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I learned that, you know, even college, after I finished college, it was hard for me to figure out how to make art, but I knew that there was the urge to make art that didn't go away, you know,
right.
Even though I wasn't living on a ship. I actually had a house in Japan that I lived in.
Oh, that's cool.
But I still managed to find ways to make art on board the ship. I took a camera with me and a ton of film. And I made projects, I conceptualized projects, and I started them and finished them. And I purposely photographed on slide film, so when we pulled into places like Singapore or Hong Kong where English was easy to find, I could take my film in, have it processed, and have the slides mounted, and I brought a slide projector with me so I could look at those images large.
That's cool.
I'd close the door of my stateroom, turn the lights on, and then
yeah.
I'd project the images. I mean, you couldn't project them very big because the stateroom's tiny, but I was able to see the photographs 2 or 3 feet wide on slide film, and that work was so important to me. That work that I made at that time was so important to me. I don't show that work anymore. I don't show it in presentations, or I don't exhibit that work anymore, but that moment was really important to me, and having done that was really important to me because it's what sustained me. I think that if I hadn't done that, I may not still be an artist. I may have given up and gone into something else.
And when you got out and you came back home, What was the plan at that point? Like after, like, I mean, you spent so many years where somehow the Navy was connected, even your education was connected to the ROTC program. So afterwards, what was the plan?
I didn't really have a plan. I knew that I was getting out. I met the man who is now my husband shortly after I got back from to San Diego, and we moved in together maybe a year later, and then I got out a year after I got back to San Diego. And I didn't really know what I was going to do. I thought maybe I'd become a postman or I'd drive a trolley. I just knew that I didn't want to work with the military anymore. Normally what people do is they go on to a shore tour after doing 4 years of sea tours.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sort of like a reward for doing 2 sea tours back to back. You do 2 years of a shore tour, which is just like an 8-hour-a-day job on a base here in San Diego. But I didn't want to go. I was just ideologically opposed to the wars, and I just had to get out. I finished my commitment, and I got out. And I didn't really know what I was going to do. I just knew that I needed to get a job so I could pay the bills. But I was definitely going to keep making art. I actually did have an art show in 2005, before I got out of the Navy. The faculty here at USD ran an art gallery downtown. And I had a show there, and I made art while I was in the Navy. I had a studio apartment in downtown San Diego, and I made that show happen. And my Navy friends came to it, the opening, and thought it was bizarre that I made art and had art shows. But it just so happened that this job that I have now 13 years ago fell in my lap because I stayed in touch with the faculty.
Yeah.
And so the day that I got out of the Navy, I started this job. The day after I got out of the Navy, I started this job at USD. And I kept it. I kept this job through graduate school. And I've been here for 13 years, which is crazy. I never thought I would be here this long.
Wow. When you think about it, like, the cool part about this university you mentioned is that if you keep in contact with people who work here, that it's a great connection to have because it's kind of a community and a family on this campus. So like somehow it always like works
definitely.
Out. There's like an opening. But once you're in here, having myself also worked here, like you can get caught, like time can go by quick after a while.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But it's cool because you found a perfect spot. But like, I think when I was in, if I remember, like after working here a couple years, you went off to grad school eventually, right?
Yeah. I knew when I was in the, I knew early on, well, maybe not early on, maybe by my junior or senior year, I was seeing my faculty as as mentors, and I knew that they had MFAs and that that was the thing that you did as an artist. You went off into graduate school. So I knew that I wanted to go to graduate school the whole time that I was in the Navy, and I knew that I would apply to graduate school, but that I just needed to build a portfolio. I didn't build enough of a portfolio in those 4 years I was in the Navy because, you know, they work you 60, 70 hours a week, you know, and you're trying to make art in that in the meantime. So I knew that I wanted to apply to graduate school. So I started this job, and I only a couple years later, I felt like I had built up enough of a portfolio. Actually, I started this job in 2006, but in 2007, I started applying to graduate school.
Wow.
I applied to graduate school in 2007 and then didn't get into anywhere that I applied to, which almost crushed me. But I picked myself back up, and then some sort of rupture happened. There was a faculty that was teaching here at the time, Mike Rich, who I don't, I'm pretty sure doesn't make art anymore, but I would sit in the back of his class, and I would listen to his lectures, and I shared a studio with him, or shared a space with him, while I was working here at USD. And the things he had to say really had a huge impact on me as an artist. He showed me artists I'd never been shown before. Mm-hmm. He showed me readings I'd never read before. And I think something happened in that year after, when I didn't get into any of the graduate schools I applied to, something happened, and I started making the work in 2008 to apply to graduate school in 2008. I'm still making that work. The lineage for me starts in 2008, and it's 11 years later. And I applied to graduate school in 2008 and got into almost everywhere I applied. Mm-hmm. I applied to all the same places and got into almost everywhere I applied with this new body of work. I was going to quit my job here at USD and go to graduate school. That was the plan. And I still have regrets at times that I didn't do that. But the chair at the time said, you got into UCSD, what if we could find a way for you to keep your job here at USD while you go to get your MFA at UCSD?
Yeah.
Which they gave me space here, so I had a studio. I shared it with Mike Rich.
Yeah.
But Mike never worked there because he lived in LA. And I had when I started graduate school, I had a studio at UCSD. So I think I was the only graduate student out of 50 graduate students. I had two studios, but I made most of my work here. I phoned it in for 3 years here at USD without anybody complaining. I think there were a few complaints, but nothing enough to get me fired or to make me quit graduate school. But I managed to make it work, and I finished graduate school in 2012, and then kept working here. So.
Wow.
It's not the way that I had planned it, but it worked out. I have no debt, which is amazing. All of my friends are just drowning in student debt.
It was like, because the MFA program at UCSD is, if you get in, it's paid for. The tuition is paid for,
it
right?
is if you TA. If you TA. But even then, you still have to take out loans to pay your bills and make artwork.
Right. So that worked out then, having a full-time job.
I didn't have to pay tuition. I had a full-time. Well, it was barely full-time. I was still... I went down to 30 hours a week.
Yeah,
which was hard, you know, financially. But you make it work. I was better off financially than most students were. Yeah. But I wasn't taking out loans.
Yeah,
I sacrificed something for that. I didn't quit my job and go to graduate school, which I'd never recommend to anybody to do that.
Yeah, I know. Because the other thing is too is when you get out, you know, it's not always guaranteed you have a job or anything right out of grad school, anyways. No. And so the fact that you still have this place. Was still going to be here, even when he got out of school. Like, I think the pressure of like scrambling for a job that I think a lot of grad students today have.
I think that scrambling is good for you, though. It makes you move to another city or do something else. And I feel like the stability of having this job has been nice. I mean, I like having this stability, but at the same time, I think there are things that, like I said, I think I sacrificed some things for the comfort of stability.
Sure.
I didn't have to scramble. I didn't have to move to a random town, which probably would have been good for me, or just to pick up after graduate school and move to New York. I didn't allow myself to do that. But
yeah. Well, for the most part, what makes you still stick around in San Diego?
My husband wanted to stay here. I was gonna possibly go to graduate school, and live a long distance relationship for 2 or 3 years. Go to UC Riverside or Cal Arts. There were programs that I was looking at, but there's something about San Diego that is just so bizarre to me. There's something about Southern California that's so bizarre to me. I only applied to graduate schools in Southern California because I wanted to be part of that. That I wanted to be in Southern California as an artist because the artists that I look to, most of them develop their careers in San Diego. They develop their bodies of work in San Diego, or not San Diego, in Southern California. But San Diego's weird. There's a lot to rub against in San Diego. It's a military town. It's the largest. Yeah. I think it's the largest suburb in the world. Yeah. It feels like a suburb of LA or something.
Right.
There's a lot to rub against here, and then we're right next to the U.S.-Mexico border, which creates a lot of tension politically and culturally, but also it's just such an easy jaunt into another country that I love. I love Mexico. It's just so easy. Just I can almost walk to Mexico. Yeah. I can jump on the trolley and I can walk across the border.
Sure.
I can be in Mexico in 20 minutes. Yeah. And I love that about it too. But it's also just kind of, there's an easy place to live. You know, traffic's not that bad, but it's a big city.
Right.
You have the good things of a big city. The beaches are amazing. There's a lot of good food here. I don't know.
Man, where are you when I'm in San Francisco and I kept having to justify moving back to San Diego one day? And everyone tells me, why do you want to go down there? I'm like, because,
well, you know,
Joe, please come in and say exactly what you just said.
San Diego lacks the things that like a city like San Francisco or the Bay Area does, or LA or Chicago or New York. We don't have like a thriving art community. A lot of people want to try to sell it like there's a thriving yeah. art community. There is not, you know. It's an easy place to live, but it's a difficult place to be an artist. There's not a lot of opportunity here. But the artists that have, there's universities here, so it's required that there's got to be some artists here. There's four large art departments, and then there's all the community colleges that serious artists have moved from other parts of the country to come teach here. So there are a lot of artists in San Diego all working at the universities.
Right.
And really interesting artists. And UCSD, I mean, has some internationally renowned artists. Most don't care about the city, but most of them live in LA, but
right.
So being in San Diego, like I know all the good artists in San Diego, and it's fun because we run into each other all the time. It's easy to get together and have dinner or drinks, without the pressure of there being like a big, the pressure of like an art career that I think that maybe being an artist in a larger city might cause. I don't know, but you know, I've not lived in any of those cities before.
Yeah.
So I can't really speak to it. I might be a lot happier in San Francisco.
Well, you know, I mean,
I do love that city.
Yeah. Well, you know, the funny part about that statement you just said was that, you know, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people who've never lived outside of New York and are practicing artists and don't know how it is.
Oh, over. True. Yeah.
Yeah. You know. So like, it's great though. I love that you just said all of that. That makes. not that I hate San Francisco where I live. It's just, you know, home is home. I grew up in San Diego County too. Home is home sometimes.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But also the other thing too is that a lot of artists, their entire life is art. So artists I know that live in LA, they eat, breathe, and sleep art, and they're in their studio, or they're at openings, or they're at talks, or they're hanging out with other artists. And that is not really my speed. I love being around artists. I love artists, and I love making art. But I also love going to the beach. I love going hiking and going for bike rides and going for drives into the desert, or just going down to Tijuana just to fuck around, you know, and not do art stuff, you know.
Sure.
And so San Diego is like a good city to do that. San Diego is, like I said, it's just a good city to live in.
Right.
You know, there's a lot of stupid shit here, you know what I
right.
mean? Like the military, all the military stuff and the huge suburbs.
Right.
And the weird racial tension is bizarre to me. But like I said, it's things to rub against. I mean, that's what my work is all about.
Yeah.
My work is about those weirdnesses.
Well, tell me about your work, because you mentioned earlier on that it was a little bit of photography, but now what has it turned into? Like what kind of things interest you in, when you make your work?
Well, I sort of have turned to the weirdnesses of like domestic space, the objects or the textures, the colors, the surfaces of the American like suburban home is what I'm drawn to. I mean, those are the things that I actually hate as a human,
sure.
as an artist, that I think they're really interesting. It opens up a whole like world of inquiry. I just came out of this panel and I was telling some students there that I just feel like there's something large that I'm interested in. I'm not quite, I don't have it like pinpointed, but I'm sort of chomping around the edges at it. Manny Farber wrote this essay called Termite Art, and he talks about like making art about something and you're sort of biting at the edges of it, and you'll probably do that for the rest of your life. I hope I never get to the center, because I think the making art would be really boring.
Sure.
If you knew exactly what you were making art about. And for me, it's more about like opening up a line of questioning, or and not answering those questions. I don't think anybody really tries to answer questions with art, but I don't know. Most projects I dive into, I don't have it like spelled out why I'm doing it. I just do it. And then I walk back and try to figure out what I was making.
Yeah.
And sometimes I throw those projects away, but sometimes I think they're really good.
What are spaces that are available in San Diego for you to show your work? Because I know you've had a couple shows, right?
Like there's not a lot. Some of the community colleges have thriving programs with their galleries. The work that I make is really just not commercially viable. I've never been interested in showing at commercial galleries. I mean, I'm interested in showing, if a commercial gallerist wants to show my work and try to sell it, hey, I'm all for it, but it's never been my
end goal. Yeah.
No. I mean, if somebody wants to own the stupid shit I make, then hey, that's great. Most of my work is super ugly and I use kind of gross material. So, there are collectors out there. If you're famous and like if people are buying Mike Kelly's work, you know, and it's gross blankets and pillows and stuff and stuffed animals, but, I'm not famous. So nobody wants to buy the stuff that I make, but, I don't make pretty paintings, you know, I don't make pretty sculptures. So commercial galleries have never been interested in my work, but I've shown at a lot of the community college galleries here. I've shown at the Museum of Contemporary Art here. There was a project space called Helmuth that closed earlier this year. I showed my work there before. We also showed work in each other's homes at one point. There was a group of us that was doing that. San Diego just lacks the sort of artist-run alternative project space.
Sure.
San Diego's a relatively large city, and I know cities that are much smaller than San Diego that have a more thriving gallery program. Cities like Columbus, Ohio, they have way more project spaces than we do. And yeah. Columbus, Ohio some good things. There's the art school there, but why don't we have more? And I think it has a lot to do with real estate. But so finding opportunities to show work in San Diego is hard. So I've shown my work in other cities. I haven't shown my work much, and I haven't shown any work this year. Wow. This year's been slow because of I'm running an artist-run project space.
That was the next thing I was going to ask you about. Best practice. And it's not just you; it's you and Ali Munt, who actually also works here.
So I run this project space. It's a small gallery. It's about 400. Almost 500 square foot gallery in the Barrio Logan neighborhood of San Diego. It started out in 2016. Ali Munt, who is she's the main arts administrator here in our department at USD. She was interested in doing more fundraising, that type of stuff, getting experience doing that type of stuff. So it occurred to me, it's like maybe I want to open up some sort of project space. Maybe it makes sense to collaborate with an administrator rather than another artist that I'm going to bump heads with creatively.
Right.
So I asked her if she was up for it. And we started out in 2016 by taking one of these glass enclosed bulletin boards that has doors on it.
Yeah.
I think you'd see them like in break rooms that have like the rules for the rules for the union or whatever. I don't know. They're announcement boards that have a glass door. So I hung it outside my studio in the hallway here at USD. And we started having shows in it. And it was easy to have shows in that because it almost cost nothing to ship artwork to me.
Yeah.
I showed an artist from Germany and I showed an artist from Bay Area.
Yeah,
Sarah Hotchkiss, yes. I think you know.
Yes, yeah. I interviewed her boyfriend Luca, who co-owns Copa Press.
Oh no way!
Yeah,
cool.
I run into him all the time, and I met her maybe once.
Oh, okay, cool.
But she's an art writer also in San Francisco.
For KQED.
For KQED.
Yeah, so I was able to show her work. She was able to ship it to me in a manila envelope. So it was fun to do that. There was like very little pressure. Very few people saw it because it's difficult to get on campus and find parking. But it was something, and I got to interact with artists, local artists, but artists that were not local. But I always saw it hopefully turning into a gallery space because I think there was something that was really interesting about this bulletin board thing. But I still felt that San Diego needed like the traditional art space because this bulletin board did not provide a space to gather.
Right.
Which the Helmuth projects to me was really important. He opened in 2013. Josh Pavlik opened the gallery in 2013 from like a collaborative that we were doing, showing artwork in each other's houses. And he landed this commercial space and lived in it and then started having shows there. And it was really important to me because it was a spot that my favorite people in San Diego gathered every few weeks. Every 6 weeks there'd be a new opening or a closing or an event, a punk show or a DJ or something happening in this space. And I thought it was really important to me as an artist.
Yeah.
And when he started talking about closing, because they're tearing down the building that he was in. He started talking about closing for a year, and then he finally closed, I think, in April of this year. I was like, oh, God, I mean, once that closes, what do we have?
Yeah.
So I really wanted to turn best practice into a gallery space, and a space sort of landed in our laps. They had a rent that we could afford to pay for now. We're working on some fundraising, but we built the space out. It took us a couple months. We got an artist in there.
Well, hence having the administrative-minded Allie.
Yeah, she was really good at keeping things organized, and yeah. She still is really good at keeping things. I'm not very organized. I'm really bad at the whole art career thing because I just want to be in the studio.
Yeah.
I don't want to think about my art career. I just want to make art, and you know. But she's so good at like. Doing the invites, keeping the website updated, and she's looking into fundraising opportunities so we don't have to keep paying the rent.
Yeah.
I mean, that's only going to last for so long. We want to do fundraising so we can keep this thing going
sure.
for a while. I think the reason that so many project spaces close is because people get tired of paying the rent.
Yeah.
If we can find a sustainable fundraising, I don't know. I don't even know how that works. We're figuring it out.
Yeah.
But so far, the gallery opened in February of this year, and we've shown... I think the artist that we have in there now is the sixth show we've had. And then we open a new show later this month on October 19th with our seventh artist in the space.
Wow.
So it's been a lot of work to show that many artists in a short amount of time.
Sure.
But it's been good. People are excited about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, like, and how do you balance your art making and that? Or it has so far you're still trying to figure it out?
Oh, I'm figuring it out. I've been figuring it out for my whole life. The studio work is really slowed down. I had a solo show at the gallery at Southwestern College about this time last year. No, about maybe 13 months ago now. It was September of last year it opened. And then I had a couple pieces in a group show at the Museum of Contemporary Art here in San Diego. And that was the last big studio push. And then in November of last year is when we got the space mm-hmm. and started building it out and cleaning it up and renovating it. And then in February, we opened our first show. And a while back, I was like, God, I'm not making work. Like, what am I doing? What's wrong with me? And I was like, oh, I'm running an art gallery.
Are you sure?
While I'm working a full-time job, you know? So... the ideas haven't stopped. I'm piling up the ideas, and I'm ready to get back in the studio. I always thought that once we got the gallery running, it would sort of kind of run itself. I'm not doing any curating.
Right.
You know, I'm just organizing shows. I'm asking artists to have solo shows.
And then it's like up to them to like put it together.
Yeah, with some minimal help from me. I do want to get curators involved, and I'd like to curate a show for the space. But up to this point, I've kept the work to a minimum.
Sure.
But even then, it's still a lot of work.
Sure.
But I kind of want to. I need to figure out how to get back into the studio because it doesn't feel good to not make art.
Sure. That's interesting. That's also great too that I think you're passionate about still having a space here in the city.
Yeah.
For contemporary artists, like, you know, like it's not a traditional gallery that sells and makes, you know, like makes money off. Like you're more, what really drives you is that you want a gathering space for people to share their work and share with the other members of the art community that's here.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
you all like get together and meet up and
right.
network.
And talk about the work.
Talk about the work and talk yeah. about each other's work. And
not talk about art at all.
Yeah. 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 Keep the relationships going.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I really believe in the nonprofit art gallery world. You know, I find commercial galleries strange, and I know it's, I guess it's strange that I find that strange, but I just find, like I said, I'm fine if a rich person wants to buy my work
sure.
and pay me money for it, but I find it strange to make art to sell.
Right.
I just can't bring myself to do it.
Yeah, I think it's about the vibe, if anything, because like I mean, yeah. even San Francisco, like. I've been at different types of galleries, and there's some that don't really feel like it's very commercial. It feels like a normal like alternative art space for people
yeah.
after the work, but they happen to be selling it if anybody's interested in buying it off the wall. But I think it's about how you, the vibe you give, I think, yeah. and how you have the space. I mean, there's some where you walk in immediately, someone's handing you a pamphlet yeah, with the yeah, prices right, right. on it. Let me know, I'm here to help you. Like you're buying shoes at Nordstrom or yeah. something. and there's some that aren't like that.
We definitely put prices on all the work, just yeah. in case, because if for anything, it's for the artists. We have only a spoken contract with the artist that we take 25%, but I want to sell art if I can, just to give some money to the artists, because the artists I'm showing are emerging artists. They don't have a lot of money.
Right.
A lot of them don't even have full-time work. And yeah. They're struggling to make ends meet.
Are there collectors in this city that collect like contemporary art?
I think so. I don't know.
Like from like this area. I mean, I know there's the collectors here, but they may be buying work from another city when they visit. But
there's a group that the Museum of Contemporary Art. They have a group of young professionals, attorneys, and stuff that have enough disposable income to buy artwork, and they have this group where they take them around to artist studios, and they came to my studio years ago, and I sold a couple small paintings from it. I wasn't trying to sell artwork, but someone was interested in these paintings I made, so I sold a couple to them. But they were cheap, you know, like $200, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know the collector world. I would think that if you're a collector, why you would look to San Diego to buy artwork when you just drive up to LA?
Yeah, that's true.
So I wouldn't even try to open a commercial gallery in this city.
Right.
You know, I mean, oh, maybe.
And you get more foot traffic, I'd assume, in LA than you do here.
People that are spending a lot of money on art, well, they'd rather go to New York or LA.
Yeah.
Or Chicago to buy art. Yeah. Well, not Chicago, I don't know. But, yeah.
Interesting. Man, the San Diego, one day someone's going to crack that code, but I don't think
I don't think so. I think San Diego's just always going to be kind of a weird, culturally strange place.
Yeah.
And I think that there's something about it that is, I like it.
Yeah.
I like that rub, you know. You know, there's some weirdness in this city. There's some weird artists in this city, too, who I love.
Well, I know that unfortunately, we're about the current show they have at Best Practice, which shows Jay Nolan's work, is closing tomorrow.
Yeah, so we have a closing reception tomorrow.
Yeah, so the podcast, by the time this podcast gets out, will probably be closed. But what would be the next one that to look forward to?
Oh, a local Chicano artist, Armando De La Torre, he is showing in the gallery. It opens on October 19th, and he's making work about his mother who recently passed away. And making work about a little bit about the neighborhood. I'm still working with him, and about he's still unsure what he's making.
Yeah.
That's how we work. That's how we roll. And he's going to be making the work over the next 2 weeks inside the gallery. So, which he's comfortable with. So, and I trust him. He's a good artist. So, and then we have shows booked out till the middle of next year.
Wow.
But we're slowing down next year. Instead of having a show for 4 weeks and taking 2 weeks off, we're going to have a show open every 2 months.
Okay.
I need to slow down. It's sure. The pace is, I didn't think on paper that sounds doable.
Right.
A show every 6 weeks.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh yeah, that's easy.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
It's all the like side things that you have to do to get it going.
Yeah. I mean,
like,
nowadays it's all the social media and everything.
Sure.
That in order to get people in the door, God, you really have to stay on top of that.
Yeah. I mean, I disappear.
Which is exhausting to me.
It is. I mean, I have a podcast. I have an Instagram account just for the podcast, and I have my own.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. And then I have my own for my wife is like, why don't you take pictures of us sometimes? Right. And then, but like, so most of the time I find myself taking pictures for the Instagram for the podcast, and it is a lot of work. Like,
and
people tell you like you have to kind of keep it going because if you don't, like people like kind of lose interest and whatever.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
It is. That's like I definitely understand why places have a social media person as a job, full time job.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, I totally understand.
When I look at galleries that use Instagram really well, I'm like, they've got to have somebody that's. I actually hate social media, so
someone
so
just write so, out of a
it's so
undergrad.
Painful. But I know that these galleries have people that either love it or just that's a huge part of their job description.
Yeah.
Anyway, maybe we'll get there one day.
Well, cool. Well, thanks for coming on, Joe.
It was great to have you on.
By the way, I've been forever trying to like know your life story. So this was my way of getting it on here. For years since I was a student, like,
what is this? This is the first time you've heard it.
Yeah, this is the first time I've heard it. Like, what is this guy? I know he was in the Navy. What is this guy's story?
Yeah, I have a weird, I think it's kind of weird, but a weird life story. I don't know.
Well, cool, man. Well, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Lewis.
Yeah.
That's it for today, everyone. Thanks for listening, and thanks again to Joe for coming on. For more info on Best Practice and the current show they have up titled Rosas y Nopales, visit practicebest.org or follow them on Instagram at bestpracticeok. You can also visit the podcast website for pics of Joe and Allie and the work that they do. You can also follow the podcast at ArtScenePC. All right, till next time.